You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, wasn't that a fun couple of days?
That was a great few days.
Gonzales, Texas. Who'd have known?
Well, I've never been to Gonzales, Texas before, and I don't think you have either.
Never. You know what? For a town of only like 7,500 people, it is absolutely a pretty town.
It's a cute little town, rivers, and it's all green. And yeah, it's not what I expected at all, but I really enjoyed the time here.
Well, you know, what was really cool is that, you know, we passed over that bridge and it said the Guadalupe River, which is the same river we've got in our backyard,
right?
So we share this same river. We could probably tube all the way down here. It probably take us about 6 days.
I don't know how many waterfalls it would be between here and there. So
We would die. But you know, the event was just fantastic, you know?
Yeah. You know, this was the first one that we've gotten to go to for Shorty Gorham's new American Freestyle bullfighting event. And, you know, so, of course, the bullfighters are the guys in PBR or really in any bull event, bucking bull event, that protect the riders when they fall off the bull or when they dismount in any way, fall off or get off.
Right.
And make sure that the bull doesn't trample them or, you know, hit them with their horns or so forth. But the bullfighting is in of itself a sport all to itself.
It's an extreme sport.
It's loads of fun. It's pretty much hilarious.
Well, 18 and 19-year-old kids that don't know any different, that the bulls could kill them.
Well, I think that they know. But yeah, we've started this sport up again. Not we, but Shorty Gorham has kind of reinvigorated this sport and brought it to arenas. And it will be in arenas around the country starting now.
Yeah, and what's neat about it is that the bulls don't get hurt at all.
Okay? Oh, no.
So it's not bull fighting like you see in Spain or in Mexico, right, where the bulls are harmed. This is guys getting in front of the bull and sort of goading the bull and trying to get as close as they can to touch the bull and sometimes do tricks around the bull, like, you know, jump over them or jump over half of him.
Yeah, they don't always make it all the way over.
And I thought the thing with the barrel is really cool because, you know, they don't do enough of the barrel, the safety barrel, you know, in the bullfighting. You know, it's a place where they use it more like a safety type
of
thing.
Well, it is. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, but
sure.
With these guys, I thought the coolest trick of the night was the guy that gets up on top of the barrel. Now, you know, there's a safety guy in the barrel.
Right.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
But he got on top of the barrel, and when the bull rushed the barrel, he did a backflip over the bull.
Oh, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
And he made it.
Well, and he won the event, too.
Yeah.
So,
but I thought that was great. You know, what I really like about, you know, professional bull riding and the American freestyle bull riding event is it's the same family atmosphere, right?
Yes.
They say a prayer for the livestock and for the bull fighters and the safety officers, and they do the Pledge of Allegiance. They sing the national anthem. They honor the first responders and the military and law enforcement. There is not a drunk person there. There's not a mean word to be said. Everybody's on their best behavior, and it's just an all-around wonderful family entertainment that couldn't be more in Texas.
Right, and there was a lot of little kids there, too. It was a lot of fun. Nobody got seriously hurt or anything like that. And it's just a hoot. It's fun. It's exciting. It's very quick. Each one is really quick. So the bullfighter goes out and stands in a small arena, and they let out a different kind of bull than what we have in PBR for the bucking bulls. This is called a Mexican fighting bull. And what the bull does is they just want to charge right at that bullfighter. And actually, they tire out really quickly, so they don't.
I was surprised to see that.
It's a very quick event, so they. It's just trying to the bullfighter's trying to stay away from the bull, kind of one step ahead of them, literally one step ahead of them. Sometimes that step is just not quite enough, and they get tossed up in the air or whatever. But it's just a lot of fun, and good luck to Shorty Gorham and that new event.
You know what I thought was really kind of cool is that the bulls, like you said, you know, they're not bucking bulls, right? So they're not the big bucking bulls that we have. They don't buck at all. And they're lean and mean, and I've actually thought the colors of the bulls were just beautiful.
Yeah, they had
some of those blue, gray, you know, colors and things. But how about the history of the town of Gonzales?
Well, that was something that I knew nothing about and I didn't expect. And I didn't know we were going to a really historical place.
Well, yeah, you know, and you know, I think my first sign that this was a historical place is it says the birth of Texas independence, and then their slogan is "Come and take it,"
you right?
Know, which is a typical Texas thing to say. You know?
And we thought that that meant your gun, but actually, what it meant was back in 1831, when the Mexican government had granted them the right to have a small cannon for protection against Indian attacks.
Right.
Well, then, when the Mexicans and
the settlers
started having disputes, then the Mexicans sent 100 military
soldiers
to come up and take that cannon away.
And so a couple of women actually put a flag together, sewed a flag together with a picture of a cannon on it with the slogan, "Come and take it."
Right. And there was only 18 men in Gonzales, and 100 came in. But people came in from surrounding areas, and they protected that cannon, and
right,
they did not get the cannon.
And it was actually the first, you know, sort of, you know, the analogy would be for Texas, it would be the first Revolutionary War battle between the Mexicans and the Texicans.
Yes.
Right? And I thought that was pretty cool. And the other thing that I learned that I really liked as, you know, a guy that just loves American history is that 32 men from Gonzales went to the Alamo as volunteers to defend it. And unfortunately, they all lost their lives.
Yes.
But then Sam Houston, you know, sort of fearing that, well, Gonzales is going to be the next town, right, that's going to get overrun by General Santa Anna at the
right
time. You know, he prepared for an escape from Gonzales, but then turned around later and got his volunteers. His army was actually part of the big army that eventually vanquished Santa Anna later on.
Well, Sam Houston actually ended up burning Gonzales to the ground rather than give it to the
right,
enemy.
Denying the enemy.
It then was rebuilt right after that. So it's a historic place. It's a beautiful little town. I've enjoyed our stay here.
And we're moving on.
And we're moving on.
Because it's Ron and Linda on the road with the Desi dog.
Yeah, the Desi dog.
And the RV.
Seems like we're always on the road. But anyway, I want to talk about a couple news things that, you know, I've been following.
Okay.
The first one is something that happened recently that I didn't hear on the news. I'm wondering if you did. It could just be that I missed it, but I thought it was kind of important. Do you remember the really, really bad character that was an ISIS militant that when they captured the Jordanian pilot and they put him in a cage and they burned that man to death? Do you recall
that? I remember. I don't know who was responsible for that.
Okay. Well, his name was Saddam al-Jamal, and he's the guy that was responsible for that. Well, Mr. Saddam al-Jamal was just captured and is in custody.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, a guy like that needs to absolutely be captured, and I'm glad that our forces had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Was it our guys, or a bunch of guys? It was the
coalition, members of the coalition that captured him.
Okay, good.
I didn't hear it, and I think it's a big story because he's such a bad actor, as you would call him. And, you know, just to have this guy and a few of his buddies out of commission, I'm really, really happy. So I wanted to mention that.
Well, you know, isn't this the same guy that basically brought his ISIS militants into that village and killed everybody?
Well, he did do that. And the other thing that he did is there was a young lady that he decided that he wanted to marry, but she wanted nothing to do with him. And the family didn't want anything to do with him, and he murdered her entire family.
Oh, my gosh. See, now this is a guy that needed to be, you know, taken into custody.
Yes.
Well, good for us.
Good for us.
Well, you know, I've got a news story, and it's about international relations in the military. And do you know that by 2030, China, the People's Republic of China, is going to virtually double the size of their navy? In comparison, well, actually, not necessarily double the size of their navy because it's been growing by leaps and bounds, but it's going to be twice as big as the United States Navy. In other words, twice as many ships as the United States Navy by 2030.
Well, I'm wondering if that may end up not being true only because with President Trump, we are also starting to kind of beef up our military and our Navy. So we need to see if that goes anywhere, at least to mitigate some of this.
Well, I think we're going to have a hard time because they are going all out. You know, they got 550 warships, of which 66 of those are subs. Right now, the United States Navy has 283 ships, of which 72 are subs. So we got them a little bit beat on the submarines, but they have completely overdone us as far as surface warships are concerned. Now, what that's going to do is that's going to present a threat to United States security in what they refer to as the Indo-Asia Pacific Theater. And, you know, actually globally too, because, you know, they're projecting all over the place. And as you remember, they're going out and they're finding these little small islands in the South China Sea that don't belong to them.
Yes.
And they're claiming them and then coming in and, you know, bringing in all sorts of, you know, dirt and, you know, everything to make big islands out of little islands.
I know, that was fascinating. How do you just add dirt to an island?
Well, you need a lot of ships, right?
Yeah.
But what they're doing, of course, is they're dredging too, and they're bringing, you know, all the extra dirt and you know, busted up coral and everything. But they're also putting airfields on there. Okay, so there's your projection of air force, and they're putting missiles in there. So they really want to be a formidable presence in that Pacific theater, and we've got a lot of stuff to worry about with respect to China.
Yep. Well, I think that, you know, we need to realize this right now. We need to get doing something about it. My mind goes to that. We have more airplanes, we'll just blow those ships out of the water if we need to.
Well, you know, they've got a lot of airplanes too.
Yeah.
And most of them, if you look at some of the designs, when they show pictures of the Chinese Air Force, they look a lot like our planes. You know why, don't you?
Well, of course, because they have to have all of our secrets all the time.
That's exactly right. They're stealing everything, right?
Right.
So their stuff looks like our stuff.
If and when we sell things over there, then we give them all that information. So,
exactly.
I mean, that's a whole nother problem, that, which is not working to our advantage. But, you know, speaking of that, I know that President Trump is doing things about this. And, you know, just as an aside, he's also got some good movement on that whole trade deficit, where China has agreed now to bring that trade deficit substantially down. And everybody was making fun of President Trump, and not just making fun of, but they were criticizing him for wanting to put tariffs on and so forth. And he's such a good negotiator. And right now, you know, it's coming out. He's getting exactly what he was aiming for in the first place by that negotiation. Rather than lying down and letting them walk all over him, we are actually getting something out of it. We're going to be sending a lot more of our farm goods and agriculture products over to China. And there were several other categories that are going to increase quite a bit. So I think that that's going to really help our farmers, and it's going to help our country and reduce that trade deficit.
Well, you know, and the thing that I really like about President Trump is that he's just not a politician. He's a businessman. He calls it the way he sees it. But he's one hell of a negotiator. And they're just in Washington, D.C. and around the world, they're just not used to that.
No.
Because they're all politicians. And this is a guy that's not afraid, you know, to call it the way it is and say, you know what, this is not good for the United States. And if it's not good for the United States, in large part, we've learned in travels through Europe and around the world that, you know, the United States has such a tremendous economic influence on other countries that what helps us helps them. You know, and you know, the whole European area and the euro and, you know, all those countries have been digging themselves a hole for a long time. So it's really nice to have President Trump come in and make these big negotiations with these massive countries, you know, like China, that affects the welfare and security of all the other nations in the world.
Yes, and he's not afraid to walk away from the table, and he's not afraid to make somebody mad. And this, he doesn't play the politically correct game. He plays the game for America to win, and that's what we wanted, and that's what we voted for.
And you know, sometimes in a negotiation, you just have to walk away from the table. You just can't appear to be so desperate that you're willing to do anything to make just a little bit of progress, and not necessarily progress that is good progress, like John Kerry.
Like the Iran deal.
Like the Iran deal.
Yep.
Right? And it's okay. If we're going to walk away from that, that's what we need to do. So listen, I saw your article about the police and the false narratives, right? And I loved it. I thought it was a great article.
Well, thank you. It's nice to know you read it.
Of course, I read
I know
your
you
stuff.
Do. You
I
always
read your
read.
Stuff.
You know, the point of that article on America Out Loud was we've got a lot of politicians lately that are doing a lot of things that really are disenfranchising our police officers. And what they're doing, and I have four examples of what these different people are doing. So real quickly, we have the Port Authority Commissioner Karen Turner was called from by her daughter and her friends who got stopped in a police stop, but for a minor traffic infraction, and turned out that the registration was no good on the car. And she ended up, you know, cursing at the officers and calling the chief of police a skinhead and trying to use her influence and her position and her relationship with the mayor as an influence to get what she wanted in that particular deal there with the police.
How'd that
which
work
was
out?
None of her business, by the way, because everybody in that car was an adult. So she needed to just butt out.
How'd that work out for her?
Well, she no longer has her job is how it worked out for her. But the point to me is the bigger point that they are trying to use their government position to influence the police to get what they want. And this is totally wrong. The next one was, and all these happened right within a month. So the next one was in South Carolina, the NAACP president, Jared Moultrie, he was pulled over for failure to signal and problem with his license plate. Now he has a Mercedes-Benz. He lives in a very nice neighborhood. And he made a big deal on Facebook and also called the police chief and told him that he was discriminated against and racially profiled.
Okay, so he's throwing a race card now.
He absolutely was. And he had said that he told his mother and a child in the car not to move because police shoot black people. He complained that the officer was asking him if he had drugs and what he was doing in that neighborhood. Well, when the body cam came out, every bit of that was false. The only true thing is that the officer was nothing but polite, asked him for his license and registration, which, by the way, he didn't have a registration.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. And that was it. The entire story was made up. So he is still in his position, is my understanding. And again, using your position, and I don't even know why he did this, because he had nothing to gain by doing what he did. Yet he totally lied about that traffic stop.
Well, you know, that just bothers me so much. You know, I can only speak about, you know, California, but when you make an internal affairs complaint in California and it's a false complaint and it can be proven to be false on its face, that's actually against the law, okay? It's a misdemeanor offense. You can be arrested for it. So, you know, I don't know about this particular state, but at least I know in California, and they'll probably get rid of that pretty soon, but you can't make those false complaints.
Right. you know what? I'm going to grab a refill of coffee if you'd like one. And then can I continue with you on this for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I take cream a little bit more. Can I give you some of that bay leaves?
Okay, you got it.
Okay.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Well, the next one was a New Jersey school board member, Stephanie Lawson Muhammad. She was pulled over for speeding, and she immediately started to sob and say that she was scared of the officer because cops hurt black people. I guess she, again, threw down the race card, right? The officer asked her if she was having a panic attack and would she like him to call an ambulance, and upon which she said a lot of bad words to him.
I just don't get this.
She told the officer that she was going to call the South Orange president, and she attempted to use civic privilege and her position on the school board to manipulate the outcome of the traffic stop. She threatened to call the officer's skinhead chief, and I misspoke on the first woman. She said a lot of other bad things, but this is the one that said the skinhead chief. And she also did not have a valid insurance card at the time. So another one that's trying to use their civic position, a government position that we pay for with our tax money.
Or race and civic position
in all of these cases, to get something that benefits them. Right? Get out of a ticket or whatever it is. Okay, and then the fourth one that I noted was the gentleman that you actually brought to my attention that was the chair of the Baltimore Police Department's Civilian Oversight Panel.
Oh, the minister.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Marvin McKinstry.
Yep.
He was double parked in the middle of the street blocking traffic, and an officer asked him to move several times.
I think it was 60 times.
Well, no, he asked him for his license and reg 60 times, but he asked him to move out of the street. And if you can picture this, you have him double parked and the officer behind him with his lights flashing.
And a line of cars behind them.
And telling him to move. And he's sticking his arm out the window saying, go around me. Can you imagine? I mean, I wouldn't do that.
The temerity of doing something like that. Hello, it's the police behind you.
So after he finally did move, the officer pulled him over and asked him for his license and registration 60 times. And he refused to give it. And
now, I'll tell you what. Now, that's a patient officer. I don't think I'd have gone 60 times with this guy.
No. And by the way, he also did not have his registration. So
with no paperwork? I don't get it.
He and Marvin McKinstry ended up with four citations, one for stopping in the middle of the street, one for refusing to give the officer his license and registration, one for not having his registration, and one for willfully disobeying the lawful commands of an officer. He refused to sign those tickets, so then he got another citation for that. So, and the dog just woke up, too.
And shaking her ears.
So the point of my story here, Ron, is what do those four examples have in common? they're public officials that we hire or elect, that we pay, that are doing this against our police department. They are not cooperating. They are not doing the things that they should be doing. And not only that, they are lying about it and they are cursing at them.
Well, you know, the thing that really, you know, irks me about this is this last example that I brought up to you about this guy from Baltimore. Okay. So, you know, I wrote a lot about Baltimore in my Black Lives Matter book, okay? Because they've had nothing but problems. You know, the whole Freddie Gray thing was a false narrative. You know, they tried to indict all those police officers. Well, actually, they did indict them, and they got them all acquitted because none of it was true, okay? But here's a guy that is did you say he was the chair of the police
civilian
review board?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the oversight civilian thing. And here's a guy that doesn't even know basic police practices 101 with regards to a detention. Hello, we put the lights on you. You're not free to go. You're not under arrest, but you're not free to go. And guess what? You have to do what we tell you to do. Okay, you have to obey every order, instruction, and command, every single one. It doesn't matter whether you disagree with us, but you've got to obey. And you don't obey, and then the next thing you do is you make out a big BS story about the police, and you are the guy that is in charge of overseeing the police, and who the hell picked you?
Well, and
right? Who picked you for that job? And who trained you?
And one would say, why did you not just show your license and registration? Well, here's his answer to that. His answer is he thinks it's time to go beyond lawful commands and just have a conversation. Okay, so the officer shows up at a house and somebody's been murdered, but that person shouldn't have to talk to him because we should just have a conversation, don't you think?
Well, you know,
this is ridiculous. This is a man who is going to be in charge of making decisions about police officers and whether they did something right or wrong, and he can't do the right thing himself, and he thinks that we should just have a conversation instead of have to obey a lawfully given police command. That is who's going to be deciding the fate of the officers in Baltimore?
Well, you know, it's clear, both implicit and confirmation bias, and it taints all of his future reviews of police officers' actions, especially now. Now, what did they do with this guy? Is he still on the board? Is he still the chair of the board? What's going on with him?
He is no longer the chair of the board. He is still on the board, which is a disgrace.
That is a disgrace.
Right. So every one of these examples is something that shouldn't happen by our public officials. So what I think should happen is just a few things. I think that any person in any type of government paid job has to have a moral turpitude clause, just like police have, that said that they have to sign before starting their position. And moral turpitude refers to the conduct that, you know, you can't do something that are against the standards of the community, which includes things like lying and being untruthful,
okay,
and not following police commands and things
okay
like that.
Okay.
So that, and if they do these things, for example, these four people are perfect examples, they should be fired from their job immediately.
Well, you know, I would go beyond that. With people that are in positions of trust, at public trust, mm-hmm, like a couple of these people that you mentioned, right? The girl from the Port Authority, the school board member, you know, this guy with the Civilian Review Commission, you know, if you get convicted of this type of crime, part of that sentencing should be that you never hold public office again because you breached the trust with the public. You've perjured yourself, basically.
Yes, but the consequences are not those types of things. So it should be those types of things. And I think that we need to have a law that says that it has to be that they lose their job, they cannot be in public office again, and they can be prosecuted.
Well, you know, along the same vein, okay, you know, there's a mayoral candidate in Chicago, and her name is Lori Lightfoot. What is important about Ms. Lightfoot is that she is the recent former head of the Chicago Civilian Police Review Board.
Another one.
Another one, right? And part of her platform is that she wants to remove the regulation that police complaints be truthful.
How is that even commonsensical? It's not common sense.
Well, you just see the direction that these last four people are going, right? And that's the direction that we're seeing increasingly, bad complaints. In other words, false complaints being made against the police. And, you know, thank God for body cams. I know a lot of cops were against body cams when they first came out. But look at what the body cams are doing now to show that, number one, it's not the police that need to de-escalate. It's the public that needs to de-escalate. You know, they need to be following directions. They need not to be trying to intimidate by position or race, you know, police officers to get their way. And, you know, the other thing about Lightfoot that just gets to me is that she is pushing for anonymous complaints. Okay, so in other words, she wants anonymous complaints to be seen as valid complaints against the police. I'm sorry, police officers have civil rights too, and part of those civil rights is due process. They get an opportunity to face their accuser and to give argument.
Well, and they don't want the police to have that opportunity. You know, the thing that really bothers me about all this, and one of my points here is, When these people come out, and for example, the person who said all the false things that happened in his stop that did not happen, right?
Right.
Once he says all that and he put it on Facebook, he gets the community all ginned up. He gets people angry. He gets people to take action. The next time that something happens, somebody could get hurt. It could be somebody that's angry about what supposedly happened to this man that didn't ever happen to this man, and he shoots an officer. Or he does something that gets himself arrested because he's being civilly disobedient. There's all kinds of repercussions that happen from these things, and you can take Missouri for a perfect example of that with
the Michael Brown case that I wrote about. Sure, hands up, don't shoot, never happened.
Right, a false narrative.
But let me take it, you know, using your point, sweetheart, let me take it a large step forward. You know, we lost those five officers in Dallas, Texas, right, just a little over a year ago. And the guy that killed those five officers, that sniper that just butchered those five officers, okay, the cowardly, you know, bastard that he was, okay, all of that came from the false narratives of Black Lives Matter jacking up that crowd. And as a matter of fact, that was a Black Lives Matter protest that those five officers were called to provide security. And that guy said, because they had an opportunity to negotiate with him before they killed him, and that was the guy they actually blew up with a bomb.
With the robot.
Yeah. Okay. But he said the reason that he had sniped those guys was because of, you know, what he thought police were doing to blacks, which in the examples that he provided were all false narratives, including Michael Brown and Freddie Gray. Well, so you're absolutely right about that.
How is it that we have somebody still in their position that has done this, in any kind of position of authority, in anything that we pay for? And that frustrates me, and I think that people need to be aware that this just can't. What I pulled on this to do this article, Ron, was all within a 30-day period.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you imagine how many more there are that I didn't? I mean, there's not unlimited space, so I could only write about these. But what I'm saying is, this is pervasive within our government officials, and people are pulling race cards, they're pulling civic cards, they're pulling
position cards.
Yeah, exactly. All these things that they have no business doing. And they are disenfranchising our police department and making them look bad to the people in the communities that they serve, that they have to live in, that they have to work in. And it doesn't do anybody in law enforcement or in those communities a service.
But, you know, honey, you're exactly right. But don't forget, you know, it's like what I wrote about. This is by design. You have to remember that what do police officers do? they enforce and protect the rule of law. And some of these groups, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, some of these, Occupy, the anarchist groups, the communist groups, the Marxist groups, the socialist groups, they are anti-democratic, and they want to break down the democratic way of governance. And the only way that they can do that is by starting to take apart the people that protect the rule of law, and that's law enforcement. And that is absolutely by design, and that's why you get those big billionaire players like George Soros and his Tide Foundation and, a couple of the societies that he's got, where he's funding tens of millions of dollars to these groups, just like Black Lives Matters and other ones, to protest and demonstrate and riot against police and government and the rule of law. That's what it's all about.
How do you get a president of the South Carolina NAACP telling these vicious lies about a traffic stop when nothing could have been further from the truth? The officer was polite. The whole stop was 4 minutes. He sent him on his way. To come out and say these things is just so against anything that's right. And how that person could remain in a job, I don't know. And the last point about this that I feel is, the news grabs these stories. So, for example, they would grab the story that this man put on Facebook about all these bad things that happened to him during this traffic stop that didn't happen, and they write about it. And they get people all excited. And that's how the police get the bad name that they get and the unfair rap that they get. And the news, rather than ever waiting until we find out the truth about something, they're just out there. And you never see the retraction, right? You just see the story that people believe, like hands up, don't shoot.
Right.
They believe it. It happened no matter what you say.
Well, as I always say, you've got to have a more of a, forensic, analytical, unemotional review of these incidents. Okay. You can't have the emotional, you can't have an emotional response. You have to have a studied response and not an emotional response when you hear about these incidents involving the police, because there's two sides to every single story. But rather than going with the emotions, the public has got to smarten up and not be led astray, because it's easy to do. And when you get the mainstream media complicit in these types of false narratives and pushing it, look how much they forwarded the Michael Brown case, the Freddie Gray case, the Tamir Rice case is another case I worked on. That was the black kid with the so-called plastic gun. And when you come out with a headline that, cops murder 12-year-old boy, but you really find out that, hey, it was wintertime. First of all, this is a 12-year-old boy that was 5'9", 174 pounds. He's not some little 12-year-old boy. And then when he's dressed up in winter clothing, he was even described by the officers and the paramedics at the scene as a 20-year-old male. Right. These are just some of the things that the public generally doesn't know anything about that we learn about in our investigations.
Well, and as I recall with that case, I remember the picture that they put in the paper about him was when he was much younger.
Right.
So they don't give a true representation of what that person really looked like.
Yeah.
And again, this is all it causes a huge problem between the police and the community. And the community amongst each other. And it causes other things to happen from that can end up in somebody being shot somewhere.
No, you're right. As I am off to say, because it's my favorite slogan, without truth, there is no justice. Hey, my turn to pour.
Good. More Baileys.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm settled back in. Thanks for the coffee.
I love the Baileys.
Let's talk about some good things.
Okay.
Had enough bad things for the evening.
Sure.
So, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are man and wife now, and I wish them the best. I didn't really get a chance to watch the wedding.
I didn't either. I saw some outtakes from the wedding, and
yeah.
I thought everybody looked cool. I thought she's gorgeous, by the way.
She is gorgeous. He's very handsome. They just looked so cute together. And the thing that I loved about the outtakes that I saw, because I didn't see the whole wedding, but every time those two look at each other, they have that look of being in love.
You and can tell. There's a glow.
Yeah.
There is.
And it makes me happy when I see people like that. You know, you never want to see people that don't like their spouse or don't like their their mate. And they just look in love. So that was really beautiful. And like you say, everybody looked amazing. And it's just a beautiful ceremony.
And it went off without a hitch. And, you know, this is a big deal between the United States and Great Britain, okay? In my opinion, I don't think our countries have been this close since our Allied days in World War II, okay?
Okay.
And it was just amazing to see the multiculturalism, because now the United States and Great Britain are joined in marriage, and by a Brit, a royal Brit being married to a woman from the United States of African American descent, and I just thought that that was just a wonderful gesture of how much everybody has grown in acceptance.
Yes, and you know what? Her mother was cheerful during the ceremony, but I was struck. I had never seen a picture of her mother before. She looks very much like her mother.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
yes, I did.
Yeah, her mother's just as cute as she is. And yeah, I mean, it's a really feel-good story all the way around. Of course, it took the media to make a little bit of not feel-good. They had to criticize Princess Kate and a couple other people there for whatever color they wore or dress or hat or that type of thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was really disappointing.
Well,
and catty.
You know, but you're... catty is the word, okay? It just doesn't show class. By the way, those women dress to the nines, okay? So, you know, we're not talking, you know, cheap clothes and stuff like that. I'll tell you what, I wish my girlfriend, Melania Trump, would have showed up. Because you want to talk about someone who dresses to the nines and really does the world of fashion a tremendous favor.
Oh, she's
you know? And
just
you know what?
Gorgeous.
Here again, you know, that woman needs to be on a heck of a lot more you know, covers of magazines, okay? Because, you know, you could just look at her all day.
Yeah, she is just such a beautiful woman. But, you know, all those women have all those hats on. We don't do that so much in the States unless you happen to be at the Kentucky Derby.
Well, I guess back there, hats is a big deal,
hats
right?
Hats is a big deal. But I wore my cowboy hat this weekend, so...
And I wore mine.
So I guess that counts. But, yeah. You know, the other thing that, speaking of the media... And how they had to say something about what people wore, right? One of the things that I noticed in our trip here to Gonzales and the people that were at this bullfighting event, and they had an after party that, you know, you and
that
I...
That was a fun after
it
party.
It was a fun
great
after party.
Music.
Good band.
Cowboys can dance, okay?
Cowboys can dance.
Just saying.
Yep. And you know what I loved? And I think I even commented on it to you while we were sitting there. The people there at that after party were as varied as you could get.
Right.
They were all races.
Right.
They were all sizes.
Yes, they were.
They were men and women. They were cowboys, not cowboys. They were all different, every kind of person that you could think of. And what was so absolutely great about that event is there was nothing like, you know, we've talked about on Life Liberty, body shaming. Nobody's criticizing anybody. People of all shapes and sizes and colors were dancing together, were laughing together, were enjoying their time together, were genuinely happy and engaged with one another through that entire event. And I really enjoyed that.
Well, you don't see the pretentiousness that you see in California and some of these, you know, like New York and, you know, some of these other places where, you know, look and dress and appearance and everything seems to be so important. What you've got here, in my humble opinion, is you've got a flyover state like Texas with good, hardworking, God-loving American people that care about each other. It's a small community. Everybody knows everybody in that community. And they're all getting together to have a good time, you know, at a great event. And I saw that, and I enjoyed every bit of that after party.
You know what was also really cute was there was the couple that sat behind us that actually we ran into earlier.
Oh, from Colorado.
Right.
Right.
And they had been over there on some business of theirs just the day before and saw that this event was going to happen, had never seen it, didn't know what it was.
Well, the husband was a PBR fan, and he saw the bull fighting advertisement, and he dragged his wife over there to Gonzales.
Yeah. And they thoroughly enjoyed it. But, you know, that was good fun, too, talking to them. And just everybody there was so much fun and so engaged with each other. And, you know, patriotic American apple pie event and party. Enjoyed that so much.
But we didn't dance.
No media there to criticize anybody.
Okay, but we didn't. I'm just saying. Okay. And I did ask you to dance.
Yes, you did.
Okay. Just saying. Just saying.
And I appreciate that.
Well, it's because I love you.
Well, I saw kind of a funny story that I got a kick out of. So there was a lady who is a mom, and she decided to honor her kids by having their names tattooed on her arm. And she had a really large, intricate tattoo done, and within there was, I think it was three kids, her kids' names.
Okay.
Okay. And, lots of roses and different things in there, right?
Kind of a sleeve, right?
It kind of a half sleeve, yeah. Okay. Anyway, she gets home and she is horrified to note that one of the kids' names is misspelled.
What?
I know. What? How about that proofreading?
Well, wait a minute. Don't you watch, having not a tattoo on my body, don't you watch them while they're putting the tattoos on? Don't you say, hey, listen, that's not how my son spells his name?
Well, you're asking me, and I don't have a tattoo either, but I would definitely, if somebody was going to ink me permanently, I would be looking at every single letter of what they were writing. Because I thought that they did some sort of a proof ahead of time. Either way, her son's name was Kevin. And what would you think that they wrote?
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Well, they wrote Kelvin.
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 Okay.
So she was horrified to note this, but that Kelvin name kind of grew on her a little bit. So what she did is
she was inked up with it. Of course it grew on her.
Yeah, it did. She decided to change her son's name permanently to Kelvin.
Oh, gee.
To go with the tattoo.
Please.
No, and she said that Kevin's a pretty common name, but Kelvin is not, so she likes it better. So that all worked out.
Oh, gosh. Hey, you ready for an animal story?
I hope it's a dog.
Okay, well, it is. It's more than one, as a matter of fact. So I was looking on LinkedIn the other day, and I saw this amazing video of these two dogs. And this is, by the way, this is not a video that someone purposely took. It was a outdoor surveillance video of a backyard where there's a swimming pool. So, you know, they've got a security camera out there, you know, next to the pool in case something happens. Well, something did happen in the pool. So they've got two black labs. One is an older black lab and one is a younger black lab. Well, the older black lab falls in the pool and starts floundering. Well, because he's an older dog and the way that the pool was constructed, he can't get out of the pool. And the younger dog is noticing that the older dog is having a hard time getting out of the pool. And he starts barking and, you know, trying to grab at him and grab at him from, you know, outside on the pool deck. And he grabs onto his collar okay? And he's trying to pull him
out
of the pool, but he's not strong enough to do it, right? Because there's not enough leverage. And the old dog is getting weaker and weaker and goes under the water and comes back up. And, you know, my heart's in my mouth and I'm watching this. And the younger dog apparently just said, well, that's enough of that. And he jumps into the pool. Check this out. He jumps into the pool. He goes under the water, comes up underneath the older dog so that the older dog can use him as a step to get out of the pool.
Oh, my gosh.
And the older dog does do that, steps on top of the younger dog who's kind of under the water, and then gets out of the pool. And now I'm going, okay, what's going on with the younger dog? And the younger dog, because he's young, right? He just, like, jumped right out of that pool. And I just remarked to myself when I saw that, that heroes are made every single day.
And they don't have to be people.
They right? don't.
Well, I have a great military story.
Oh, well, go for it.
Because I love our military. There is a set of quadruplets that in Michigan that are going all to serve in different branches of the military. So they're about to graduate from high school. And they all decided to join the military, but all different branches. So the quadruplets' names are Bryce, Rose, Mason, and Nevin Lees. And they're going to become members of the U.S. Navy, the Air Force, the Air National Guard, and the Marine Corps.
Oh, Semper Fi.
I know. Good. And the one with the Marine Corps is already starting. The other ones are just going to be going in. Isn't that interesting? Quadruplets, right, that are all just alike, and they all chose different military
branches of the service.
Yeah,
well, that's wonderful.
Yep,
and good luck to them on their service.
Yeah, they their grandfather and brother-in-law are the ones who inspired them to serve, and yeah, good luck to them.
Isn't that the case though in so many families where there's good mentorship and you know, there's respect for other family members. It's a parent, it's a brother, it's a cousin, you know, it's a grandfather, something like that. And they make such an impression on these young lives that they want to follow in their footsteps. You know, I just think that's wonderful.
Well, and I do think that the military can be such a good thing for some students who may not be ready for college, who may not want to go to college. They can get really good job training there. They can really learn how to grow up there. They learn, you know, our son's friend who went in the military, I'll never forget. He went right in after high school and he went in as a young boy and he certainly came out as a really good man.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, there are benefits of being in the military when you get out. So the GI Bill and, you know, to further your education or your job skills. So, you know, I mean, the military, you know, is not for everybody, but it's for a lot of people and people that have done it and served their country. I mean, what greater thing to do than to serve your country? And when you come out to have that respect of other people, thanking you for your service and moving on with your life, in a different direction or maybe in the same direction that you started out with in the military.
Exactly. Well, I have one more story for you that has to do with dogs.
Oh, go ahead.
So Bruce and Little Dude are two dogs in Hawaii. And they're in that Puna area where the volcano is erupting on the Big Island.
Oh, Kilauea.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that those fissures are opening and they're spewing lava everywhere, it's coming all different which ways. And it's taking people's homes and it's isolating people because it's blocking off roads and so forth. Well, this family got evacuated and they left, but their dogs had kind of run off and they couldn't find them. Well, then the dogs got caught in the middle of lava that it surrounded them and they couldn't get out.
Ooh.
So they weren't at that moment in danger, but they could never get out. They were stuck in this kind of zone there. And so they airlifted these dogs out the other day.
Well, how did they find them?
Well,
of course, they're using a lot of drones and everything over there. How did they see the dogs?
Well, I don't know. They said that they were going back and back, and they probably were using drones because the area was blocked off. You couldn't get a car or anything in there. So they said that they were stuck behind a fence, and they couldn't get out because they were surrounded by lava. So they actually, some people did get in there, I guess, and they crawled in and they got the dogs, and poor dogs were, you know, dehydrated and covered with ant bites, but they were alive.
I would think they'd be traumatized too. Yeah. You know, that's, you know, we've been there several times, and that is one of the more fascinating places in the United States is, you know, that Puna area and seeing Kilauea. And I love it when we go to the Big Island and we stay overnight. We just do it for one night, but we stay overnight at the volcano house on the rim, right, of the giant crater. And what I love at night, at least last year when we went, now we know, you know, what the result of that was.
Right.
But remember, we remarked that we'd never seen it.
Lava fountains.
Right. We never saw lava fountains before. And it just lit everything up in the middle of the night, and it was so exciting to watch that.
Yeah, I've been going there since I was a kid. My dad used to take us, and I've never seen a lava fountain until this last year, and now we know that it portended something else happening, right?
Well, I tell you what, those people need to stop fooling around, and they need to get out of there, okay? Because when those fissures open up, you never know how much explosive energy there is inside of a mountain. It's not a, I understand the geologists are saying it's not a Mount Hood type of volcano.
Right.
But it's certainly one that could crack open and swallow a lot of stuff.
Well, the amazing thing about this is the amount of fissures that are opening. And now the geothermal plant there is in danger, and it's starting to have lava come towards it and be surrounded by lava. And that really could be something very explosive in and of itself. So they're frantically trying to stop some of that by plugging some of the vents or the holes. Wow. I don't understand exactly how they do that. But yeah, this is not slowing down. It's actually a very fascinating event, and I love watching it on TV. And, you know, luckily, it is an explosive one, and people can get out of the way, and they can be evacuated. So it's not flowing so fast. But the thing is, it's not stopping either.
Well, you know, the thing that strikes me is that, hey, look, it's Mother Nature, and it's unpredictable. You cannot predict what's going to happen. You know, me, I see something like that, I'm going in the opposite direction just as fast as I can because I don't want to fool with Mother Nature.
Well, it was very funny that they had a meeting of the people in that community, and the people were wanting to know from the officials in the community exactly how long this would last.
It could last hundreds of years.
You'll
be dead. It'll still be going on.
I don't know what answer they expected, but it was, I just shook my head at the question.
But you know what? When you hear dumb questions like that, you know why they live there too.
Well,
okay. Because they're not the sharpest knives in the drawer.
That's not nice.
They're not.
They're on the side of a volcano though, so bad things can happen.
No, we wish them the best. In all seriousness,
it's a beautiful, was a beautiful town, pretty much surrounded by lava now, but
not anymore.
Fascinating to watch.
Well, listen, I'm Bush, sweetheart. That was some driving that we were doing, and I loved our time in Gonzales, and I'm ready for bed.
Well, and we're on to our next adventure after this, so let's get some sleep.
That's it.